Welcome to the AM Jackson Podcast with your host, Mark Daly. News, sports, and conversations that are important to Jackson County. This is the AM Jackson Podcast.
Local Jackson news now from the WKHM.com News Center.
Good morning. 5 minutes after the top of the hour. Reporting with WKHM News, I'm Mark Daly. Investigation is underway in Jackson after a shooting Tuesday afternoon left one person injured. Police say shots were reported about 3 o'clock in the 100 block of Wall Street near Carl Breeding Way and Martin Luther King Jr. Drive. Authorities say a male victim from Jackson was inside a home when multiple suspects outside began firing. He was struck in the neck. The victim was transported to Henry Ford Jackson Hospital and is reported to be in stable condition. No additional details have been released, and it's unclear if any suspects have been identified as that investigation is continuing. Morning commuters in Jackson County are being urged to use caution after overnight storms brought down trees and power lines across the area. Officials say drivers should be alert for debris in the roadway, especially on back roads and in low-lying areas where visibility may be limited. Downed trees have already caused closures in some spots, creating hazardous travel conditions during the morning commute. Meanwhile, Consumers Energy is reporting more than 1,600 customers without power across the county, including Hanover, Brooklyn, and Grass Lake areas. Estimated restoration times vary, with some outages expected to be resolved as early as 9:30 this morning. Others might not get their power back until mid-afternoon. Drivers are reminded to never approach downed power lines and to report hazards to local authorities. Flood watch now in effect through Thursday for Jackson, Washtenaw, and Livingston counties as a strong storm system moves across southern Michigan. Forecasters say heavy rain could lead to excessive runoff, raising the risk of flooding along rivers, streams, and other low-lying areas. Severe weather is also possible, including hail and wind gusts topping 70 miles per hour. Watch extends across much of the region, including Calhoun, Eden, Hillsdale, Ingham, Lenawee, Monroe, Oakland, and Wayne counties. Drivers are urged to use caution and avoid flooded roadways. Just a foot of water can float a vehicle, and deeper water can quickly sweep one away. Eyes are on the Sheboygan Lock and Dam Complex. At last update, there's about 8 inches separating the water and the top of the dam. The DNR is placing giant-sized sandbags known as super sacks and working to put 2 24-inch pumps in place to move water around the dam. Governor Gretchen Whitmer declared a state of emergency Friday, and DNR teams have been working since then to increase water flow through the dam. An evacuation notice has been sent to portions of Sheboygan because of levee breach at the Little Black River watershed. The county sheriff's office is telling anyone living northwest of the Sheboygan River, near their downtown area, and as far west as Inverness Trail from 66 to the shore to evacuate. This is unrelated to the Sheboygan Dam. Authorities are asking those to evacuate to mark their door with a towel or rag to show that they have evacuated. Evacuations continue in East Bay Township, southeast of Traverse City, after several spots were reported with significant flooding. Residents across East River Road are being assisted, and crews are working to secure damaged propane tanks in the area. They remind you not to enter moving water on foot or by vehicle. The currents are swift, and you can become stranded or swept away by the current. A ready stage protocol has been triggered for the intermediate river downstream of the Bellier Dam. Water levels have risen to within 12 inches of the top of the dam. The Atrium County Dam's operator and emergency manager are advising those downstream of the dam to be packed and ready for evacuation. The go order is usually given when water levels are an inch below the top of the dam. Menominee County in the Upper Peninsula is another area that has declared a state of emergency due to ongoing flooding. The waters have already caused damage to homes and businesses, according to the Menominee County Board of Commissioners. And the State of Emergency Operations Center will remain open to respond to rising water levels across Michigan. Warming temperatures combined with recent rain and ongoing snowmelt have increased water levels. This will ensure work continues around the Sheboygan Lock and Dam Complex to increase pumping capacity and place sandbags. But it also helps with them deploying additional supplies to other areas of the state that may be at risk of flooding. Three women have been charged with home invasion after they talked about the event on a Facebook live stream. Early Sunday morning, they believe two 19-year-old women and a 21-year-old woman broke into a home and assaulted an 18-year-old Battle Creek resident over a previous relationship. Police had a description, a nickname, and a photo, but hours later, the suspects were found returning to an unoccupied vehicle with its hazard lights flashing. The three were taken into custody. Former University of Michigan football coach Sherrone Moore has been sentenced after he pleaded no contest last month to two misdemeanors.
Those charges being trespassing and malicious use of a telecommunications device that could have landed Moore in jail for upwards of 6 months. However, Judge Cedric Simpson sentenced him to a probation deferred sentence, meaning no jail time if Moore adheres to mandatory counseling over the next year. After the hearing, Moore and his wife Kelly met with reporters along with defense counsel Ellen Michaels, who did the talking.
Sherrone is grateful for this matter to be resolved, and he and his wife Kelly are ready to move forward with their family and focus on the next chapter.
That next chapter being counseling, and Moore having an October 2027 review hearing. Again, if he goes through as requested what the court is ordering, the charges against him will be formally dropped.
John Hewitt, reporting for the Michigan News Network.
Pontiac mom will spend years in prison after leaving her kids in deplorable conditions. 31-year-old Hieramis Johnson pled no contest to three counts of second-degree child abuse after leaving her three children in a home that was full of trash and had no running water for days at a time. Judge Yasmin Poles, who sentenced Johnson yesterday, previously sentenced her to probation for fourth-degree child abuse.
The fact that you stood in front of me and lied then, when those kids were probably in that same situation at that time, sickens me as a judge, should sicken the whole community, that you could be that evil, that you could stand here when I could provide any resource for you at that time.
The 2024 case involved Johnson fleeing from police with kids in the car. Police say new DNA technology helped lead to an arrest in an Oakland County cold case dating back to 1997.
It's very important to me, very important to the family.
That's a clearly emotional Southfield detective, Daniel Weeks. His work on this 30-year-old cold case, he says, brings some form of closure for the family of Deborah Kennedy. She was stabbed to death inside her apartment near Nine Mile in the Lodge in February of 1997. The case sat cold until Detective Weeks spent 2 years reworking the case, talking with now retired detectives and employing the latest in DNA mapping. Police Chief Alvin Barron says an item from the victim's autopsy proved critical in cracking this case wide open.
Fingernail clippings taken from Mrs. Kennedy, which appeared to contain skin from her attacker.
Enough for Detective Weeks to find a positive match leading him to Deborah's former neighbor, 58-year-old Robert Joseph Covington, residing in downstate Illinois. After a traffic stop, Covington was cuffed and in custody. Now extradited back here, he sits inside an Oakland County jail cell, having just been arraigned on open murder charges.
I'm Tim Pamplin for the Michigan News Network.
Jackson College is inviting current and prospective students to visit its newest facility, the Applied Technology Center, and learn more about its academic programs in utilities and HVAC. The open house is happening April 23rd, 6 to 8, and Saturday, April 25th, from 10 till noon. The new ATC opened in February and features flexible, innovative learning spaces designed to provide hands-on, real-world training opportunities. The college's utility and HVAC programs are built to meet critical industry needs and prepare students for in-demand careers. At the open house, visitors can tour the facility, speak with program faculty and members of the Jackson College team about curriculum, program expectations, and enrollment process, and more. While students are expected to get the most out of these open houses, Jackson College says that all are welcome and there is no charge or required registration to attend. Shelby Township woman has been charged with animal torture in connection with allegedly abandoning her dog.
Officers found the dog while performing a welfare check on 38-year-old Stacy Pollock. The dog, which was said to be extremely malnourished and underweight, was reportedly blocked by a gate. It's now in the custody of the Detroit Animal Welfare Group. Pollock was arraigned today on one charge of third-degree animal torture, as well as abandoning or cruelty to one animal. If she's able to post the $10,000 bond, she may not have any contact with any pets and has to wear a steel cuff tether. Jeremy Jenkins, Michigan News Network.
A Democratic candidate for governor in Michigan, Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson, has gained the endorsement of former Michigan Governor Jim Blanchard.
The President of the United States is trying to seize the voter rolls in Michigan, including the Social Security numbers of everyone, which means to me he wants to intimidate people. We have in someone with Jocelyn a leader who will push back on that and prevent it from happening.
Blanchard says Benson has done a good job of leading a large state department. The Michigan Democratic Convention is this weekend in Detroit. Are you often stressed out? We often think of stress as a bad thing, but Priority Health VP of Medical and Clinical Operations, Dr. David Rizzutko, says not all stress has to be bad.
We can look at stressors in one of two ways. It can either really shut us down and we can be paralyzed by that stressful experience, or we can look at a stressful situation as possibly an opportunity to learn, an opportunity to grow. And a good example of that would be a presentation at work or maybe a school performance on a test.
Rizzutko says that a lot of stress can lead to increase in heart disease, anxiety, and diabetes.
We can get, chronic headaches. We can get children experience chronic stomach aches, truly anxiety. It can change our mood and affect. We can become very irritable or even start turning to things like substance use or abuse or misuse.
He says that you can deal with bad stress through exercise, restorative sleep, music, and journaling. Let's wrap up where we started earlier this morning with the weather. There were possible tornadoes in West Michigan. There were possible tornadoes in Allegan and Berry counties, but National Weather Service Grand Rapids meteorologist Joe Ciro says survey teams will have to go out today to check the damage and determine if there were actually tornadoes. There were thousands without power in Allegan and Berry counties. There were also possible tornadoes in Ann Arbor and in Garden City. It's Wednesday, and it's the 15th day of April, the day we celebrate Jackie Robinson Day. It's McDonald's Day, National Anime Day, National ASL Day, National Glazed Spiral Ham Day. Dude, that's every Easter, isn't it? National Gripers Day, National Rubber Eraser Day, which makes the second half of the day, what happened to my eraser at the end of my pencil day. National That Sucks Day. Man, you need to flip your perspective. Find the positive side. National Titanic Remembrance Day, National Micro Volunteering Day, and it's also World Art Day. It was on this date in 1865. President Abraham Lincoln died several hours after he was shot by John Wilkes Booth at Ford's Theater in Washington, D.C. In 1912, the ocean liner Titanic began sinking at 2:27 a.m. in the North Atlantic after hitting an iceberg the evening before. A total of 1,517 people died, while more than 700 survived. It could have been 701. There was room for Leo on the door. I'm not saying, I'm just saying. It was on this date in 1955, Ray Kroc started the McDonald's restaurant chain. It was on this date in 1959, Cuban leader Fidel Castro started a goodwill trip to the United States. It's on this date in 1990, Greta Garbo passed away at the age of 84. On this date in 1997, Christopher Reeve
received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. On this date in 2012, Kim Jong-un, the new North Korean leader, made his first public speech. So on this date in 2017, actor Clifton James, known for Live and Let Die and The Man with the Golden Gun, he died at the age of 96. It was on this date in 2018, R. Lee Ermey.
Holy Jesus! What is that? What is that? What is that, Private Pyle?
Sir, jelly donut, sir!
A jelly donut?
Sir, yes, sir!
How did it get here?
Sir, I took it from the mess hall, sir!
Is chow allowed in the barracks, Private Pyle?
Sir, no, sir!
Are you allowed to eat jelly donuts, Private Pyle?
Sir, no, sir!
And why not, Private Pyle?
Sir, because I'm too heavy, sir!
Because you are a disgusting fat body, Private Pyle!
Sir, yes, sir!
Yeah, I'm gonna be honest with you. I was looking for a cut from Toy Story, but you just can't pass up the jelly donut in the Foot Locker scene from Full Metal Jacket. R. Lee Ermey, former Marine Corps drill instructor turned Full Metal Jacket and Toy Story actor, died at the age of 74 on this date in 2018. Earth Days today include Maisie Williams, 29, actress from The Game of Thrones, Cody Christian, 31, actor from Pretty Little Liars and also from Teen Wolf, Emma Watson, 36, today from the Harry Potter franchise, Samira Wiley, 39, actress, Orange is the New Black, Handmaid's Tale, Seth Rogen is 44 today. If you haven't watched The Studio, we are two episodes into The Studio, and it's so funny. Cooper Barnes from Henry Danger, 47 today. Luke Evans, 47, actor, Fast and Furious 6 and Beauty and the Beast. Danny Pino from Cold Case and Law and Order SVU, 52 today. Flex Alexander is 56, comic one-on-one. Emma Thompson is 67 today from Sense and Sensibility. Nanny McPhee, and really a whole bunch of others. Leonardo da Vinci would have had a birthday today. He passed away in 1519. And Elizabeth Montgomery from Bewitched, she would have had a birthday today. She passed away at 95. Other birthdays today include Esther Dean, Drop It Low, 40, R&B singer. Patrick Carney, drummer from the Black Keys, is 46 today. Chris Stapleton has a birthday today. Chris Stapleton turns 48. Ed O'Brien, guitarist from Radiohead, he's 58 today. Samantha Fox, if you can believe it, Samantha Fox is 60 today. Linda Perry from Four Non Blondes, 61. And Dave Edmonds, singer, guitarist, is 82 today. For more local stories, breaking news, and interviews with Jackson's newsmakers, visit us online at WKHM.com. I'm Mark Daly.
I'm Mark Daly, and you're listening to the AM Jackson Podcast.
And let's go ahead, jump in, and take a look at your sports. Tigers had a thrilling victory yesterday over the Kansas City Baseball Royals. Let's go ahead and get the recap here from Dan Dickerson.
3-2 pitch. Hi, this is Dan Dickerson. The Tigers scored two runs in the bottom of the eighth inning, come from behind, and pick game one of a three-game series with the Kansas City Royals by the final of 2-1. This is a matchup of two really good lefties, and they were both very good in this game. Framber Valdez for the Tigers, Cole Reagans for Kansas City. Incredibly, they gave up one run combined on four hits and struck out two batters, one each. Cole Reagans went six innings, no runs on one hit, four walks and one strikeout. Framber Valdez gave up just a scratch run in the second inning. Couple of singles and a walk loaded the bases, and then another ground ball scored the run. He left the game down 1-0. Kansas City bullpen came on. Bottom of the eighth inning, Zach McKinstry started the rally with a double down the right field line, went to third on a Gleyber Torres bounce out, And then with the infield in tight, Cole Keith pinch hitting, hit a bullet up the middle. Bobby Witt Jr. dove to his left, took a hit away. Two outs, man on third. Kevin McGonigal at the plate with a 2-1 count. Pitch in the dirt. Bounce off the chest protector as Salvador Perez kicked out to his right. That allowed Zach McKinstry to score to tie the game at one. And then Dylan Dingler rifled a shot down the left field line right past Garcia at third base. Got to the wall. McGonigal waved home. There was no play at the plate. Double scored a run. Tigers took the 2-1 lead. Kenley Jansen out of base runner to get to third base with one out in the ninth, but then he got a ground out and a routine fly to end it for his third save of the year. Tigers have won four straight after their 4-9 start. They're now 8-9. The Royals fall to 7-10 with a loss. Game two coming up on Tuesday night. Seth Lugo on the mound for the Royals. Jack Flaherty for the Tigers. 6:40 start. We're on the air at 6:15 on the Detroit Tigers Radio Network.
Dan Dickerson with the recap as Tigers get the win. We'll have that contest for you tonight, 6:15 for the broadcast. That is a 6:40 first pitch on Fox Sports 101.9 FM. So in the way too early edition of this look at our standings, you have the Tigers now in third as they're trailing the Twins, who are 11-7 on the season. The Guardians are 10-8 on the season. The Tigers are 8-9 on the season. And Royals in the fourth spot at 7-10. The White Sox in familiar territory as they sit there in the basement at 6-11. By the way, incidentally, same record that the Red Sox have of 6-11. Always enjoy seeing the Red Sox have a horrific season. So Tigers, Kansas City Royals today. The experts who put together the sports books are saying the Tigers at minus 131. We have Jack Flaherty. We've got our box of chocolates up on the mound. Never know what we're going to get. Predictor puts 59.4% in favor of the Detroit Baseball Tigers today. And on to, we'll get to NBA. We'll get to the NHL in a little bit, but yeah, it felt like the last few days we've run short on time for high school sports. So we're bumping that up in priority because we want to run through all of our high school sports. Before we get to high school sports, former Michigan football coach Sharon Moore avoided jail time as he was sentenced to 18 months probation by Ann Arbor District Judge Cedric Simpson. Moore will continue to avoid jail time if he doesn't violate his probation and continues counseling. All right, on to high school sports. High school baseball yesterday. Concord picked up a 5-3 win over Maple Valley, breaking things open. Four-run third inning, Waylon Mandrell, Lane Blossom delivered key hits in that rally, while Gavin Risky struck out six to earn the win on the mound. Lumen had a big day. They swept Cardinal Mooney 10-8 and 15-1. Benny Gaston drove in five runs. And Wes Learned struck out nine in game one. And Learned Harrison Botke each had two hits and two RBIs. Springport also earned a sweep over Reading, 14-1 in game one, 19-3 in game two. Gibson over Wegg homered and drove in four runs in game two. Ripken over Wegg added four RBIs in the opener. Jake Kriegel also went deep for the Springport Baseball Spartans. Western pulled off a dramatic 9-8 walk-off win over Coldwater, scoring twice in the seventh. Chase Budd delivered the game-winning two-run double, finished with five RBIs. Panthers completed the sweep with a 7-0 win behind a no-hitter from Brody Parrott, who struck out six over five innings. In baseball today, high school baseball today, you've got Addison at Hanover Horton at 4 o'clock, Grass Lake at Grosse Pointe Woods at 4:30. Jackson will be at Northwest today. That is set for a 4 o'clock first pitch. High school softball last night, or yesterday afternoon, however you want to look at it. Leslie swept East Jackson 12-1 and 15-1 in Cascades Conference play. East Jackson managed just three hits across two games. Lumen Christi also picked up a sweep over Bishop Foley, winning 4-0 and 3-2. Bella Rosa, Let's see. That four-nothing game, Bella Rozak won a pitcher's duel in the first game of the Catholic High School League doubleheader. She struck out 17 batters to keep the Ventures at bay. Mallory Acaro drove in a run in the bottom of the sixth to break the nothing tie. Game two, it was Lumen 3, Bishop Foley 2. Bree Okanuski went 6 1/3 strong innings to get the win on the mound. Bella Rozak got the last two outs to earn the save. In game two, Allison Furness drove in 2 runs. Lucy Rozak had 2 hits to lead the offense. Springport rolled to a sweep of Reading, 10-1 and 16-0. Brooklyn Love had 3 hits, 2 RBIs in game one. Morgan Shoemaker, 19 strikeouts in the nightcap. Peyton Collier finished with 2 hits and 3 RBIs. Ashlyn Underhill picked up the win. Coldwater swept Western 18-0 and 17-5, and Michigan Center edged Jonesville 6-5 yesterday. And high school softball happening today includes Addison at Hanover Horton, Columbia at Chelsea, Dexter at Grass Lake. East Jackson will be at Jackson, and Springport will be at Homer. 4 o'clock first pitch times across the board there. In boys golf, Addison picked up a jamboree win at Lake Leanne, shooting 174 to edge Leslie by 3 strokes. Michigan Center finished 3rd, followed by Grass Lake and Vandy. In the SEC, Sharp Park, Tecumseh took 1st with a 163. Jackson finished 2nd at 170. Lumen placed 3rd at Green Hills with a team score of 183. And in the I-8, Western took the team win with 305, just ahead of Marshall. Bentley Kuhn of Western was medalist once again, shooting a 7 under par. Girls tennis. Western girls tennis visited Hazlitt, came home with a 5-3 victory against a very competitive Viking team. This improved the team's overall record to 6-1-1 on the season. They are the 9th-ranked team in the state. Wins came from 1 singles, Chehek Vahtari, single, 2 singles, Ellie McCullum, and 4 singles, Sylvia Bivens. 1 doubles, Becca Bruschaber and Sophia Nguyen. And 2 doubles, Anna Wilcox and Anna Willinger. Next up for the Panthers, Holland Christian Quad, Saturday at 9 o'clock. Columbia Central also took down Leslie, 8-0, and St. Mary's beat Lumen, 5-3. You have boys lacrosse happening today, 5:30, as Jackson is at Ypsilanti Lincoln. Let's get you to girls soccer in the Big 8. It was Quincy beating Springport yesterday, 6-4. Cascades Conference, nothing from yesterday, but today you've got Jonesville at Columbia, Grass Lake at Manchester, and Hanover Horton at Michigan Center. Kick times across the board, 5:30. I-8 soccer. Today you've got Western at Dexter. That's at 5 at 5:30, Lumen at Northwest. That's JV only. That's going to be at 5:30. And in the white, SEC white today, Chelsea at Jackson, Ipsy Lincoln at Pinckney, and Adrian will be at Tecumseh. 5:30 kick times across the board. Wait, hold on. Chelsea at Jackson, that's a 6:30 kick time. And Jackson Christian soccer. Let's see. The Royals of Jackson Christian. Yesterday, they got a win against Battle Creek Calhoun Christian, 5-0, and that one, that puts their record at 2-2 on the season. All right, that's a look at your sports. We do have some track. We'll see if we can't get to that next time around. Oh, heck with it. Let's take a quick look at the results. For a tri meet, Addison Center at Columbia yesterday. For the boys, it was Columbia getting the win, 71 over Center. Michigan Center beating Addison, and then Columbia beating Addison yesterday in that tri meet. For women, it was Columbia beating Center, Addison beating Center, and then Addison beating Columbia in that tri. All right, we are out of time. That's a look at your sports. Again, sports courtesy of Kettlebell Hotspot Sport and Fitness Center.
You're listening to the AM Jackson Podcast with your host, Mark Daly.
Back to AM Jackson, live from the County National Bank Studio.
We'll make our way to ABC News headlines here in a little bit from Jenkins Insurance Group, Farm Bureau Insurance Agency, insurance coverage for your home, auto, or your farm. But before we go any farther today, it's time to welcome back to the program Jackson Mayor Daniel Mahoney. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Good morning, Jackson. How you doing today?
I'm doing well. And look at that. I remember the theme song unprompted and on time and everything today. So...
That's right. That was nice.
All right. So now, that last we talked, we were spending a lot of time talking about the upcoming youth summit. Did that happen? And what? How'd things go, Mayor?
It did happen. It was really, really nice. They had a ton of community resources that came out to support them and provide them with some information. They had some phenomenal speakers at the event. And they had some really good food there also. It was really, really nice. It was very well put together, very well thought out. The feedback that I got from the young people who I know that went, they really enjoyed themselves.
Okay.
So it's just nice to see our youth council active in the community. It was a really great event.
Right. I know, as a Gen Xer, and I don't feel like it's this way anymore, especially since the generation that came up behind us. I don't want to speak for you. I'm not exactly sure where you land, but as a Gen Xer, it was like the generation that was behind us. We had always complained about them, how they couldn't do this, they couldn't do that. And I feel like they proved us wrong once they got into the workforce. This generation that was involved with the Youth Summit, how do you feel about, these young people who are taking part in that? Do you feel like Jackson is set for success with the way our youth are and the way they have engaged with that youth summit?
I do. Some of our City of Jackson Youth Council are at that age of graduation and, you know, moving on in life to, you know, the next big thing for them, you know, going off to college. And you know, my biggest hope is that the autonomy that they've had to run the City of Jackson Youth Council and the experiences that they had while doing it, and the impact that they may feel that they've been able to make on other young people's ability to lead in this community. I hope that it was impactful enough that once they conclude their college years, that it'll be enough to pull them back home and say, you know what, I know I can make a difference in Jackson because I was already making a difference before I left. And so let me go back home and continue to make a difference there. That's really my biggest hope for what our youth experience in general in the City of Jackson. I think that is, you know, I think being in the position that I'm in, that's the way I look at all of our young people. That we know at some point they may venture off out of the city. And, you know, we just hope that they find their way back home, bring their talents and the things that they've learned and experiences that they've had back home to Jackson. And I think that this type of event is something that will create a core memory. I remember when we hosted our first youth summit in the City of Jackson. And I was there, I attended it, this has happened, and these are the people who I met because of it. And, you know, hopefully for those who are on the youth council that were there to experience it, it introduced them to some new individuals around the community, some other young people who are like-minded, and that it had an impact on them, that they want to get more involved and hopefully sign up to be part of the youth council. So I really thoroughly enjoyed the event, and I just think it's nice when they're able to do stuff like this.
Jackson Mayor Daniel Mahoney joining us here on AM Jackson on News Talk 970 AM 101.5 FM. Mayor, here we are. We're in your final summer, your final year, your final term as mayor. And last year at the end of the year, we had talked about this and you had set some goals and set some priorities. Are we to a point now where we can evaluate kind of where you are with those goals that you set and progress that you still want to make throughout the spring, summer, and fall of the last really few months of your term?
No, there's still some things being developed right now that I'm planning on pushing for, and so we're not quite there yet. You know, I still feel pretty strongly about some of these things that I want to get done, and it's going to take some work to get things positioned to be able to get them done. So. Okay. I'm not quite ready for that conversation yet.
Okay. Well, I feel like part of that was to get cameras out in the neighborhood, and that program was released. How many cameras have been put? I mean, do we have an idea how many cameras have homes volunteered to put up to kind of, you know, at least keep an eye on crime, and maybe we can follow up on some of those bad actors in the city? How's that program going right now?
I appreciate you for asking that question. At this point, we are probably down to zero cameras available.
Okay.
Out of the cameras that we allotted, I believe 100 cameras is what we set for as a goal to get out into the community. And the last report, which was maybe 2 weeks ago almost, was that we only had 14 cameras left.
Okay.
There were 14 cameras left, and that was about 2 weeks ago. And so now they're going into the next phase, which is very timely right now to start getting those cameras out and installed for the citizens who signed up for them. Because as the weather gets nice, the bad people who do bad things seem to be thawing out as well. And this is the time of year where, you know, those types of activities seem to increase.
Okay.
You know, we had an incident just yesterday where an individual was shot, unfortunately. You know, it brings up a lot of trauma for myself and for my family. It happened right next door to the church where my niece was killed at last year. And so, you know, there's all those emotions that spring up anytime something happens in the community at all. And I'm sure that families who have suffered from you know, losing someone to gun violence. Anytime there's gun violence in the community, I'm sure they feel a certain amount of grief during that time because of what they personally experienced. I certainly did for sure myself even. And so, you know, this is the time of year where we really have to make sure that we are being vocal about what's happening in our neighborhoods and being careful about things that are happening around us in general. Those cameras are something that I believe are going to be a huge help to the community once they are actually deployed to the citizens who signed up for them.
All right. Yeah. Well, we're of course looking forward to kind of monitor the success of that program as well. So. Well, Mayor, I understand that our time is a little short this morning, and is there anything that you would specifically like to cover before we kind of end our conversation here this morning?
No, I don't have anything specific. We've got a meeting next Tuesday at 5:30. 6:30. Second floor, same place, same times. We always have meetings. Always like to invite out our community, our citizens, if they've got anything they want to contribute. We've got a citizen comment portion of the meeting where you can come in and you can speak your piece for 3 minutes during the citizen comment portion of the meeting. You can normally catch council people before or after the meeting if you need to have a conversation with them in depth. And, you know, we always invite people out to hear the business that's being taken care of at this particular meeting that we're having. So, that's really it, Mark. I appreciate you. I appreciate the opportunity to connect with the listeners and citizens of the city of Jackson You know, we just thank you for this platform to be able to, you know, get information out. This is a super important platform that you guys have, and you guys do a phenomenal job.
No, thank you for the kind words. And we, as always, we appreciate the opportunity. We appreciate the access, and, you know, appreciate our friendship too, Mayor. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
Well, you have a wonderful day, and we'll talk with you again next week.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thank you. A good day, Mark. Have a good day, Jackson.
I'm Mark Daly, and you're listening to the AM Jackson Podcast.
Back to AM Jackson, live from the County National Bank Studio.
News Talk 970 AM 101.5 FM. It is 8:32 and a half, and we have Lauren Forner joining us in the studio. Hey, good morning and welcome. Good to have you back.
Good morning. I'm happy to be back.
Your timing was perfect. You got in the building right before the...
I know. Then.
Yeah.
I don't want to leave now. I'm sorry. I work here now. I'm just going to hang on the couch. Sorry. it's not happening. It's terrible out there.
Wouldn't be the first time that's happened. It wouldn't be the first time. So Ivy Rehab, ABA Therapy, which part of that are you with, Lauren?
Yes. So I am the ABA side. Okay. Unfortunately, my business partner in crime, she is booked and busy, so she's not here today. Mm-hmm. But Tori is our pediatric side, so that's going to be PT, OT, and then hopefully one day speech. Still trying to find a speech path.
Yeah.
You know, speech therapists out there, we're really cool if you want to work for us. We can use like three of you. Not to shamelessly plug, but so I'm the ABA side. So I strictly work with children with autism. To receive ABA services, you have to have that diagnosis.
Okay.
For Tori, it's more of a script, which is like a prescription from their pediatrician.
Okay.
So that's kind of how we differ a little
bit. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I asked Vince to reach out because this is Autism Awareness Month.
Yes.
And those are the kids, those are the individuals that you work with.
Mm-hmm.
And for many years it's been misdiagnosed or not sure if we even should have a diagnosis because individuals on that spectrum, it's so vast.
I mean
it's so vast. How do you know if you should even have your child tested?
See, yeah, that's the hard part. I think that's what parents ask themselves. And I think there's also such hesitation because parents are nervous of like that label and being, you know, lumped into a category, right?
Yeah.
You know, everyone says there's like statistics for how many kids have it and things like that. And it's like, why are we putting numbers into it? I get we have to, but, you know, they're kids at the end of the day. No kid is perfect, and that is okay. I think when you should really look for a diagnosis is if you are noticing signs that your kid is just not meeting milestones, and there's just so much more support that you need that you're not able to do it at home by yourself, and you think, you know, more professional help can help.
Yeah.
So a lot of the times parents that are coming to me after a diagnosis are saying like their kids are just having like quote unquote a lot of behaviors. They're not able to communicate, so they might be hitting or biting or throwing things instead of being able to communicate their needs. It could be they're really picky eaters. You notice stimming, which stimming is just like a lot of the same movement. So like hand flapping is super famous. Stimming can be like listening to the same song a million times, liking to look at like light up things for a very prolonged amount of time,
okay,
are like common ones. But I always say just talk to your pediatrician. If you have concerns, they should be able to, you know, tell you what you need. And even if you're nervous about doing ABA because it is a big commitment, I always recommend like occupational therapy and speech therapy if you feel that your kids aren't hitting those milestones.
Mm-hmm.
Those are easier to get access too quickly. ABA, that process is very long. So if you're even considering it as a parent, I recommend starting the process.
Right.
Sometimes to get the diagnosis alone can take 3 to 6 months. After that, you have to wait for them to write a report that can take another month or two.
Mm-hmm.
And then you might not be guaranteed an immediate spot. Like I know Ivy is filling up really fast, so you might be on a wait list to even get ABA services started. So I just recommend like if you have any like thoughts of getting a diagnosis or starting it, just do it.
Right.
Even with the diagnosis, you don't have to use it. You know, like if you decide you don't do ABA therapy, that's okay. But at least you have that tool to get resources later.
Are we finding that parents are still not wanting to deal with that stigma? And that's why they're hesitant to do the testing?
I think some parents I've noticed it's it might be a stigma. I mean, that's a really hard, because I feel like the stigma is like something's wrong with my kid, and it's I don't ever see it as something's wrong with them. I love the kids I work with so much. Like, I've done this for a reason. I don't know how to do anything else. Yeah. I hang out with a neurotypical kid and I'm like, you're not as fun. Love ya, but I miss my kids at work. They keep me on my toes more, you know? But I think that's hard, you know? It's putting a label on, and no one wants to put a label on someone.
Right.
And so that part's hard, but it's also the ABA has had a bad rap because there have been bad companies out there that are very compliant based of like physically managing kids, like you have to do what I say because I tell you to do it.
And that's work.
Yucky. That doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
If my goal is for the kids to one day bathe themselves, you know, brush their teeth on their own, if I'm the one forcing them to do it and then I take myself out of that equation, they're not going to do it.
Right.
My goal isn't for someone to be barking at them 24/7 to do something. So I think there's just so many different reasons that parents might be nervous, and I fully understand. But yeah, getting that diagnosis early though can be so helpful. I've seen kiddos that have come to me for like our after school program that are like 7 or 8, and parents are like, I don't know what to do, and they didn't get early intervention help. And so like the kids are now like eloping out of you know into the roads, or they're like they're bigger and stronger, and they're hitting their parents, and the parents don't know what to do. But if you get that early diagnosis and you start, because we can start, you know, as young as 2. We usually do very small hours because that's just a little baby. But like, we can try to help you guys figure out coping strategies for these kids, help give them what we call replacement behaviors. You know, hitting you is a form of communication. Let's figure out how we can have them communicate.
Because they don't know of another outlet.
Yeah,
that's what their body's telling them.
Yeah, and that's what we're here for. That's that one-on-one therapy where, you know, me and my staff, we are trained to be able to handle and stay calm in those situations and figure out how to support your child. And parents don't have that ability. Sometimes you have 2 or 3 other kids. You're trying to make dinner. You just worked 9 hours. You don't have the time to sit down and like figure out why your kid's communicating that. Sometimes you have to like try to figure out quickly how to like redirect or figure something else out. And once we figure out how to help those kids in our centers, we teach parents how to do it at home. So it kind of takes that pressure off of parents too, of like, let us figure it out for you, and then we will teach you how to do it at home to make it better for you.
Right. Yeah, you mentioned labels earlier, and I mean, for those who just aren't aware, don't know what it's like to live with someone with autism, and those labels come out like it's the weird kid, or it's the bad kid, or it's the violent kid. And that's why getting a diagnosis is so important for the family. But I mean, this is why this month is so important, to promote awareness, because they're not weird kids. They're not bad kids. They just need a little help.
Yeah. I always like to joke every day that I'm like, we are making the like the weird kids, but in a fun way.
Yeah.
Like, our kids that don't know how to socialize, instead of like putting words in their mouth like some ABA companies do, where we're like, I want swing. You know, we're teaching them funny phrases that we use. Like, hey, like we approach them in how we would approach our friends, and we're making them, you know, kids that are going to be able to be with their peers and be able to joke around, but be the fun, weird kid, you know, because if they struggle socially, and they have a diagnosis, but they have the support, we can help support them socialize. Right. If you don't get the diagnosis and then they don't know how to socialize, they're going to get labeled as the weird kid.
Yeah.
Either way, unfortunately, because kids can just be mean sometimes. But I do think I see a shift with the younger generations of being very much more accepting about autism and ADHD. I think kids now, everyone's like, yeah, I have, you know, both, or I have one. And they're a lot more like comfortable with admitting that, and having that label be more of like a strength of like, hey, this is why I need different communication from you. You know, I want kids that I work with, I have some kids that eventually will have jobs, you know, because it's such a spectrum. Some kids might need support for the rest of their life. Some kids might live on their own and have jobs. I want them to be able to know, like, I can advocate, hey, I have autism, and so when you give me feedback as my boss, this is how I need it. Or when you give me a direction, I need it to be direct, because then I will immediately do your task. So they're able to hold down a job because they can advocate for what they need.
Right.
So, you know, not looking at the label as a bad thing, but as a tool.
Right.
This will help them be more independent later. But it's hard. It's hard. Well,
because it's so vast. There's such a variety there. And each individual. And that individuals. That's the word.
Yeah.
Because they're individuals. And each person they react differently. They handle things mm-hmm. differently. There's not one person that's the same from one to the next. Everybody reacts differently.
Yeah, and that's just being a human being at the end of the day. That's not having autism, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, so, but yeah, I really recommend, I said over there, the part of awareness, what I really wanted families to know is, like, lean on the supports you do have, talk to your pediatrician first. If they don't know next steps, you can call us, you can look us up, Ivy Jackson ABA online, find our phone number. I will always help walk you through it, whether you're going to be, like, a customer with us, or if you are going to go to a parent, like, a competing company. I want to help you go through the process. It is lengthy, it is complicated. Some people don't know how to help you. So I know the process. I've helped families for years go through the process. So, like, use this as a tool. If you have any idea of if you want to even start, at least get answers. Call us, bug us, come physically in, stop by, and we will help as much as humanly possible.
Okay. Now, how long have you been, as we have Lauren Former here from ABA Therapy, how long have you been doing what you're doing?
Me, personally, about 8 years. I started as a technician. There's technicians, they work one-on-one with the kiddos. They're our bread and butter, couldn't do our jobs without them. I started as that, and I went and got my master's degree and became a BCBA, which is a board certified behavior analyst. A bunch of fancy words for just, I have a degree, I can write treatment plans, so insurances give us, you know, all the things we need for kids to be there. And I overlooked the techs, but yeah, I started as a tech, worked my way up. I've been a BCBA for... oh God, like 5 years now.
Okay.
And then the clinic director at Ivy for, we've been open like 7 months now, which is crazy to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I've like stopped moving in 7 months or like slept or not been anxious for like a minute, but full honesty, it's worth it. You know?
Well, doing what you do for a better part of a decade then, have you seen a swing? Have you seen a shift? Have you seen, you mentioned kids reacting better to autism now. Are we seeing it as a society? Are we seeing it with family? Have you noticed a difference in like the you know, near decade that you've been in this field?
I would think so. I also think maybe me becoming older and then my technicians I work with are the age when I started.
Okay.
Seeing how they talk about it, seeing how they talk about it with their friends, seeing how it's like, for them, they're like, well, yeah, autism, yeah, ABA therapy, like, duh, I know what that is. When I first started, people didn't even know. Like, when I tell people I worked in ABA, most people would be like, what? Because I used to work two jobs. I was a server. Loved to kind of be like, oh, yeah, I work with children. Tip me better. But I would do that on the weekends. But I would tell people and I'd have to give them a whole spiel about what it was. Now I can say, like, what I do, and everyone's like, oh, yeah. Like, yeah. I know. So there's more awareness of at least the supports and like the diagnosis for me. I also feel like I got really lucky. My first company, they were amazing, and they taught me very like client-led care and very compassionate care, so I didn't have to see that shift. That's kind of the experience I've had, but I'm seeing shift in other BCBAs that are becoming BCBAs now, that are graduating, entering the field, that are a lot more into compassion over like compliance, which is extremely nice to see.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so I want to ask you, because you've got such a good positive vibe, but what you do is so hard. I mean, how do you balance that? How do you keep this good positive energy going all the time when what you do is so hard and so draining?
I mean, we have good days and bad days.
Yeah.
You guys just get me at my best. but I do think it's, you know, when I first started in the field, it was a lot harder. Like, I looked at every single time a kid had a behavior, I was like, okay, we have to figure out the science behind it. We have to do what we have to do. This is so stressful. I have to make it happen. Now that I've been doing it for a long time, I'm like, does a kid need a snack? Does they need to go to the potty?
Give them a Snickers.
Are we good? Like, you're not you right now. Like, or I'm just like, it's okay. They're just having hard feelings. We'll help co-regulate. I'll sit on the floor. If they want to come up to me, we'll give them a nice big snuggle and we'll go back about our day. It's not that big of a deal. I think being able to be like, other people's behavior are not a reflection of me. I think that's what people have a hard time. Like, even parents, which is so normal. Like, if their kid gets upset, they're like panicked because they think it's their fault or it has to do with them.
Right.
But it's like, sometimes people are people and just let them feel. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, I have my good days and bad days. You can ask my employees. Some days I'm like, guys, I need you guys to only get it together. Sure. Don't ask me any questions. And there's other days where I'm like,
But honestly, your energy's up there. It's up there, you know, which is a good thing.
I think it's the kids at the end of the day. Like, if I have to do a bunch of office work, I'm like, I hate my life. If my boss is listening, no, I don't. I love it. But then as soon as I go out with a kiddo and they like they say my name or they snuggle me or sometimes mm-hmm. I'll be like, okay, pop off queen, and they'll say it and like do the little hand motion. I'm like, okay, my day is fine. Everything's fine. I'm not stressed anymore.
So how much, when you're dealing with kids with autism, how much of it is being proactive, trying to prevent, you know, identify and prevent those triggers, and how much of it is reactive? Once, you know, they start to have a reaction to jump in and try to mitigate that, or is it a mix of both?
I think good ABA is always proactive.
Okay.
Don't wait until the behavior happens to solve the behavior. Give the tools the kids need in advance. It's always going to be reactive at first mm-hmm. as you're learning a kiddo. But if you know, we call them precursors or triggers. There's a lot of different names mm-hmm. for it in the field. But like,
which term do you prefer?
Depends on the day.
Okay.
Honestly, all right. I have my own lingo. I'm not big on like the science-y using all those, you know, languages. I'm like, okay. I'm talking to parents.
Yeah.
They don't have a master's degree in this behavior analysis, you know. Right. But it, you know, at first you have to learn what triggers a behavior, and then from there on, put things in place to help reinforce them accepting. So like if a trigger for a kiddo biting you is that they just need that sensory input, mm-hmm. you know, they need to chew on something, having a chewy around all the time. We have chewy necklaces we put on kiddos. That's being proactive. Yeah. We know that his biting is not because he's a bad kid, but because he needs some type of sensory input. So we're trying to be as proactive as possible. It's going to be reactive at first while we learn them, but good ABA is always going to be proactive long term.
Okay. And is the majority of it sensory, whether it's touch, feel, sound, all, I mean, is that what the triggers usually are? Some sort of sensory input?
Yeah, a lot of the times it's going to be sensory. A lot of the times it's going to be transitions or like accepting no, which no kid likes, right? No right. one, like, I don't like it as an adult. I'm a 31-year-old. Don't tell me no, okay? So I'm like, I get it, buddy. But I think what we see is, like, they just have a harder time coping. Like, even my nephew, uh-huh. he's neurotypical. If I tell him no, he's still really upset, but he can bounce back quicker. Uh-huh. You know, our kiddos on the spectrum don't bounce back as quick. So we just have to work on tolerating it even more and, you know, giving them coping strategies so that long term they'll be okay. Because if you tell me no now as an adult, I know I can't bite you. Uh-huh. But that's because I have coping strategies that I can like internalize. I can be like, deep breath, it's not that big of a deal. Instead right. of biting you. Kids don't have that, whether they're, you know, neurotypical or on the spectrum. So.
All right. So for parents, for family members, you recommend getting to the pediatrician, mm-hmm. getting the diagnosis. If there's any question.
Yes.
Whatsoever, right?
Yep.
What's your message to our listeners who, you know, maybe they're out in public and they see a situation, they see something. What's your message to our listeners? How should, really, if someone's out in public, how should they react to if an episode's going on?
Mind your business.
All right.
Sorry, that was rude. No,
but it's true.
I work with so many parents that they feel so judged.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's okay. You know, move on. The parents already overstimulated. The child's overstimulated. Let them handle it. You know, I wouldn't say like, I have a hard time because sometimes mm-hmm. I want to approach and just be like, I'm a professional. Do you want me to help? But I don't want to insult either. So a lot of the times I just move on. If I make eye contact with the parent, I just give a smile.
Yeah.
You know, they are having a hard time. I'm sure they're going in their car and crying. I'm going to cry thinking about it because I've worked with parents for so long and, you know, it breaks my heart. But they've said that so many times. I just did an intake for a new client and the mom said that. She's like, I just feel so judged when I go out because he starts throwing things. And I'm like, okay, well, why is it their business? That's not their kid.
Right.
You're not their kid. You know, leave them alone and let them handle it. And they're trying their best and they're the parent at the end of the day. They got to make those decisions.
But. Yeah, for the longest time, it's been, we want to put all kids in the same kind of box. It's been like that for a long, long time. And we're not in that space as a society anymore.
No.
At least we shouldn't be.
Well, and I think we have higher standards for, honestly, uh-huh. I've seen kiddos, they get diagnosed with autism and then ABA therapy will have higher expectations for a 3-year-old than a neurotypical. Mm-hmm. Like I've seen companies that make kids sit for 15 minutes at the age of 3 to do work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so sorry, but a 3-year-old sitting for 15 minutes to do work, what 3-year-old does that? They learn through play.
Yeah.
So just because they have autism doesn't mean that you also have to have such strict expectations uh-huh. that they don't even get to be a kid at the end of the day.
Right.
So every kid has meltdowns. It's okay.
Right.
It's okay.
Yeah. After after they get the diagnosis, what's the next step? What should they do?
Yeah, so first step is talk to a pediatrician. Pediatrician does a referral for a diagnosis.
Okay.
That's where you might want to call me, because there's specific centers that you need to go to and get on wait lists. So that's where I can help kind of navigate for parents for them. After the diagnosis, they're able to, if they have private insurance, they can just contact us about a referral for ABA. Then we get the ball rolling with them as a consumer. Yeah. But if they have like our local CMH, they talk to their case managers, which I love our case managers. They all have my number. I'm very annoying, so I will annoy them all the time to help get the process going.
You're annoying but in a good way. Come
thank
on.
You. Yeah. I just tried to help. I think they sense it. They're just like, Lauren has ADHD. She's all over the place, you know, but she's trying her hardest. But yeah, just at any point, if you feel like there's a roadblock, call us.
Okay.
Even if you're not going to be, like I said,
right,
with us, I'd rather your kid get a diagnosis, you get the resources, whether it's with us or another company. I also always recommend touring every company.
Okay.
I'm confident that people like us, but I do want you guys, like anyone, to get exactly what they want out of therapy.
Yeah.
So look at, competition is very good in our field. I think competition drives us to be a better, like better at our job and better for our customers, our consumers, whatever you want to call them, like patients, clients. I just call it our families. But, you know, do your research, go around to everyone. You never have to say no or yes to me just because I helped you. I want you to be very comfortable, because it's your kid at the end of the day, and they're going to spend a lot of time. It's like a second home for them at that point. I have kids that come up to us for 30 hours. I'm like, we are your family.
Right.
You know, like I see you more than I see my parents.
Yeah. Do you see parents who feel like they're alone all of a sudden? Hey, we've got a sense of community. We now know people who have like challenges. We've got people that we can share with, that we can talk through things with now. You see that?
Oh, absolutely. And even for the kids, sometimes it's their first experience having friends.
Uh-huh.
It was really cute. We were doing like Christmas parties and things like that. My mom was coming in as like Mrs. Claus. We were doing cookies, and the parents came in, and they all exchanged numbers. And I was like, I can't do that because of HIPAA and medical reasons.
For sure.
But you guys can do whatever you want. And so like they're going to each other's birthday parties, and like they have mom friends now that like get it. And
that's,
then they
feel great.
Yeah. And their kids are friends because they play tag all day, and that's my favorite part. And then even just that feeling of community, because we meet with the parents monthly. Like all of my parents, they have my phone numbers.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes they'll just be like, Lord, I just need a vent, or you know talk whenever. They just feel like they have someone that's never going to judge them and is going to be there to listen.
Where should people go if they want to learn more?
So if you Google Ivy ABA Jackson, it'll pull up our website, our phone number. You can also just come by and do a tour at any point, 1077 North Wisner Street. But yeah, I recommend, because we do have companies in other areas, because I told them, I don't know how much you guys expand, but we have locations in like Adrian, Dexter, Tecumseh, like all over Michigan. Yeah. So if you go onto Ivy's website, you can look at everywhere.
Well, we're worldwide with the AM Jackson podcast, so we're
everywhere.
All right.
World domination, right?
trying. Lauren, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You're listening to AM Jackson on News Talk 970 AM, 101.5 FM.
You're listening to the AM Jackson podcast with your host, Mark Daly.
Back to AM Jackson on WKHM, Jackson's News Talk 970 AM and 101.5 FM.
News Talk 970 AM, 101.5 FM at 9:35, 25 minutes now in front of 10 o'clock. And it's a pleasure to have joining us in the studio today, Jackson County Prosecutor Kelsey Guernsey. Hey, good morning and welcome back.
Good morning. Thanks for having
me. Good to have you here. So you've been busy.
I have.
You've been real busy.
I have.
We might lean into some of that here in just a little bit.
Sure.
But let's talk about what you're here to talk about today.
And
it's the PATH Summit.
Yep.
Tell us about that.
Sure.
What is that?
So it's our new rebranding, if you will, a new iteration of what Jerry Jarzynka started of our drug summit.
Mm-hmm.
And it had some different names over the years that he has done it. And I believe he did 7 of them. And really the focus was education. It was educating our community and bringing our community together. How can we address as a community substance use disorder? And what can we do to impact those that have, you know, that are impacted by it? Because we know substance use disorders like domestic violence are across the board. It affects everybody, you know, in the same way. We are really excited this year for our kind of new summit. And the new summit is going to be, this year at least, a celebration. And it is a celebration of those that are choosing sobriety and those that have been those frontline workers for years and years and years. We've been, done all this education, all this talk about prevention and treatment. And this year, though, we're really wanting to celebrate everybody who's really worked hard at it. You know, recovery, a lot of those that are in recovery in an attempt to reduce the stigma, it's this recovery out loud kind of thought process. And we really wanted to embrace that this year and really celebrate all of those in recovery.
Right. That's hard work.
Yes.
I don't know because I don't have that as part of my background, but I know people.
Yeah, me too.
And I understand.
Absolutely.
Again, not my experience, but I understand how hard of work that is.
And you can see it, right? You can see those that are going through it and are choosing to walk that path.
Right.
That it is. It is a difficult path and so much strength to make that choice. And a couple years ago, I kind of learned some of the science behind it as well and how substances impact your dopamine. And, you know, what is a, you know, I got a cup of coffee in front of me. You've got one in front of you. What does caffeine do to your dopamine levels? And what does a glass of wine do to a dopamine level? Mm-hmm. And then what does heroin and meth and cocaine do to your dopamine levels? And when you look at the science part of that, I don't know how anybody ever gets clean, because once that stuff impacts your dopamine levels, your brain chemistry, I don't know how everybody then chooses to get clean, because you're going to lose all that dopamine. That dopamine's what makes you happy. You're going to lose all of it. So the strength that it takes people to choose to get clean and to choose every single day to stay clean, it's so much strength, so much strength.
And you mentioned responders too.
Yeah.
Those who are on the front lines
absolutely
of this are going to be. So this is like a celebration and a recognition, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Yes. No, we have invited, we've had really great kind of members of any programming in our county have been at the table. So Family Service and Children's Aid, Catholic Charities, Home of New Vision, Health Department, Henry Ford, Sheriff's Department, Blackman Township, you name it, Andy's Angels and Andy's Place, you name it. And we've had them at the table. And it's been a really good collaborative group in talking about what do we do. And that's what we've come to, is we have a lot of frontline people that are working really, really hard. And we really want to embrace and celebrate them because they're getting it done. So we're giving away 6 awards on Wednesday. And that I'm excited for: a therapist of the year, an organization of the year, a clergyman of the year, an educator of the year, a community advocate of the year, and a peer coach of the year. So we've gotten all these nominations. We're working on kind of figuring out who's maybe deserving of them. But we have some people doing big stuff in our community. We want to celebrate that.
All right. So that was my next question: if those have been, you know, kind of released yet?
They have not yet.
Okay.
They
so
have
it'll be
not.
That night when
correct.
Those are announced.
Yes. Okay. Yes. We'll obviously let those that are going to receive them know ahead of time so we can make sure they're there.
Right.
But we're still, our hope is by the end of the week that we kind of know who of the nominations that we have, who's going to get the rewards.
So this is happening on the 22nd from 5 to 7, American One Event Center. How do people get tickets for this?
So you can register. I think you're going to post our flyer, and there's a QR code in the bottom of it. You can also go to our prosecutor's website or prosecutor's Facebook page. It's posted there. There's a QR code. It's free to register. It's a catered event, so Big Guy Catering is providing all of the food for us, and they're going to have a great spread. Now, it's small plates. It's maybe not a full dinner meal, but small plates, and then we've got desserts as well. We also have childcare available, so Early Impressions is providing childcare for the event. So, you know, we didn't want that to be a barrier as to why somebody might not be able to come. It is in the evening from 5 to 7 at the American One Event Center, but we wanted to make sure it was, you know, accessible for anybody who wanted to be there.
Free event, Big Guy Catering.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it sells itself.
Right. Exactly. You know? Exactly. And we've had such great sponsors too. You know, the Sheriff's Department has sponsored and has contributed, Lifeways, Dawn, Jackson Community Foundation, YMCA. I'm sure I'm going to forget True Community. I might forget one or two, and I apologize. But we've just had some great, great sponsors. An American One Event Center and American One Credit Union is always so great to let us use that facility. And that's such a great building. And they, you know, it's available. Have at it, you know, and they're great to work with. So
what went behind the decision to pivot from the education piece? Did that just, I don't want to say run its course, but what was the reasoning behind the pivoting from the education piece to this more of a recognition and celebratory piece?
Yeah, I think we recognize that we've done a lot of educating, and it's never ending, right? There's always more educating to do. But we really wanted to take a moment this year. We'll probably go back to some educating next year and doing some more conversations and whatnot. But right. sometimes those summits can be a bit luxury, right? They can be a bit, this is what we need right. you to do.
Yeah.
And this year we wanted it to be, you know what we're going to make this be a celebration.
Okay.
We might go back to educating. We might go back to bringing kind of the community together, because I think there are great messages in that. And I do think we've made a lot of progress with these drug summits over the years. Mm-hmm. This year we just chose to pivot a little bit and to celebrate, because right. we've got some great people that are making a big difference.
How big of a problem is this in Jackson? Now, comparatively.
Yeah.
Because it's a problem everywhere.
It's a problem everywhere.
It's a problem everywhere.
Absolutely.
But when you look at Jackson and try to compare that to Detroit or
sure.
maybe Lansing or some
sure.
of the others, how big of a problem is it in Jackson?
You know, I mean, I think we're probably comparable, right? You know, based on population. I mean, because it's a problem everywhere, you know.
Uh-huh.
But I can tell you, you know, my staff present every felony file to us every week. Every Wednesday is our staff meetings, and they present all of their felony files to us. And I can tell you that probably more than half are yeah. related to drugs in some way, shape, or form. They might not all be drug charges,
mm-hmm.
but they're related. It's either a possession, or it's a breaking and entering because we have a drug problem, or it's this kind of a larceny because we have a drug problem, or it's a bag check because we have a drug problem, you know? So a lot, I mean, it's impactful. It's
yeah.
impactful on everything, you know? And a lot of my thought process around a lot of those cases are, look, if I can treat the substance use disorder and I can stop then the criminal behavior, great. Mm-hmm. But sometimes that criminal behavior ties my hands, right? Sometimes
right.
what they do, I'm like, yeah, I no longer get to just help you get treatment. Now we need to protect the community from you, you know? And
yeah.
so it sometimes ties our hands in terms of what they do because of their drug use. But we do, you know, our first thought process is, if we can help address the substance use disorder, then we can stop the criminality
it's
and we can
cost.
Stop it long time, right?
Yeah.
It's not just
yeah.
fix it in the moment where I might put them in jail or even prison for a short amount of time. I can fix this potentially for the rest of their life if we can address the substance use disorder. However, sometimes that criminality ties my hands for community safety,
yeah.
and then we just have to protect the community. So,
is there a certain type of drug that's kind of leading the way right now in Jackson? Or
in terms of our charges, I think methamphetamine.
Okay.
I think methamphetamine is probably the most popular one. I understand it's probably the easiest one to get a hold of. That's what I experience and see the most in all of those. We still have heroin. We still have fentanyl. We still have cocaine. You know, the rest of the big ones, if you will, exist. We also get a lot of pills that have weird things in them. People think mm-hmm. it's Xanax, or people think it's an Adderall pill, but it's got meth in it, or it's got fentanyl in it, or it's got other things in it that they're not aware of.
Yeah.
So, you know, we see a lot of, especially our young people, who accidentally take something thinking it's one thing and take something else.
With what's coming into Jackson, is it part of a larger criminal organization? You see on social media
sure.
all the time about how gang activity is such
yeah.
is so large, so is that where it's coming in? Is it part of a larger criminal organization?
For sure, part of it.
Yeah.
You know, so we have the Thoroughbred Family Gang that was here in Jackson, and you know, from 2019 through 2022, probably, they were the focus of a lot of resources. I was on that gang task force at that time and kind of was the lead prosecutor for those, for the local cases. And ATF came in, and a lot of them were indicted federally. A lot of them are doing 15 plus years federally. And yes, they had guns, but it was honestly the drugs. It was their heroin. They had this special brand of heroin. They were bringing it across state lines. They were bringing it from other locations, you know, also because we're on a 94 corridor and we're between Chicago and Detroit, two major metropolises, you know, lots of drug use in those. We on that corridor sometimes get that. So I don't know that I'm as tapped into a pipeline, if you will, but it's absolutely violent related at times. And that Thoroughbred family at one point was bringing in. We right. saw a huge drop off once they were all indicted for our overdoses, that were our fatality overdoses, excuse me. We saw a huge decline, like an obvious dip when they were all finally indicted and that group was broken up. It was like, oh,
wow.
I mean, it was obvious. It was so obvious. And it stayed lower. It's climbed a little bit because, of course, you take away one group and somebody's going to fill those shoes, right?
Right.
So it's come back up a smidge, but we are nowhere near those fatality levels that
yeah.
we were when TBF was running rampant okay. in our community.
So when we're seeing drug-related crimes here in Jackson, is it violence as a result of trying to find a way to get that fixed? Does it go from from, you know, trying to find that high from, you know, petty thefts to robbery, and it escalates? Or what are we seeing here in Jackson?
I think that's probably a fair assessment. You know, I think a lot of users, honestly, most of them commit nonviolent offenses. They do. They're looking for quick fixes they're looking for. We don't have a lot that commit the violent offenses.
But it escalates, doesn't
it? But it does. And it mostly escalates in thefts that then become dangerous, right? Maybe you've stolen a gun because you just want to go sell it, but now somebody's intervening and now you have a gun and you're not maybe the most stable person with your substance use disorder, right? So it definitely can escalate, and we definitely see home invasions in particular. And honestly, they tend to be home invasions of people you know, right? Your family members that are suffering from a substance use disorder. Hey, I know grandma has jewelry in her bedroom, right? I know my aunt or uncle has this or that. And so we see home invasions, and home invasions have the potential of being really violent really fast, unfortunately. And so those are a lot of the ones as well that we have to take a far more of a community safety stance on than we do kind of a let's get you some help and let's try to give you some time to work on this.
I love what you're doing. You're trying to intervene. You're trying to find that root cause.
We are. We are.
Head it off before it becomes a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, we do the same thing with mental health, right? We now have a mental health court in Jackson County again. Judge Jakey has started that back up. Judge Claren used to do it. He did it for a lot of years, 10 plus years. And it's an emotionally draining docket, right? You're doing a lot of work and trying to help people that maybe don't always want it. And so Judge Claren backed off of it. Nobody picked it up for a little while. And Judge Jakey has recently kind of picked it back up and is running with it again. So, and it's the same kind of thing. Again, if a mental health is the root cause, then let's try to address that. Now, there are some, again, criminality that is due to mental health that it's a community safety concern. And I have to make that action. But if it's that smaller stuff and it's a mental health concern and I can get you a caseworker and a psychiatrist and therapy and medication and all of this stuff that we can address the root cause, well, that makes lifelong differences for our community as well.
Right.
You know, and so it's this twofold game.
When it comes to substance abuse in Jackson, how much of it do we see as being multi-generational too? Are we seeing that as learned behavior? Kids grow parents who had issues then end up having kids who have issues?
And it's really unfortunate, too, because I've done a lot of the juvenile docket. And, you know, the amount of times that kids say, I first used with mom or dad, right? I first used with mom, or mom was the one that brought the meth home, or I found mom's meth. It's just heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking.
Oh, man.
And so, again, if we can address that, the root cause with the parents, we can sometimes save a next generation of kiddos as well. And that, you know, is always a thought process that we're having of, what can we do to better our community? And it starts with our juveniles a lot of times, of what can we do to make that generation.
Jackson County Prosecutor Kelsey Guernsey in the studio with us. Well, let's give our listeners the elevator speech once again. Let them know what's happening on the 22nd.
Absolutely. So it's a PATH summit, and it is a celebration of both those in the sobriety community and our frontline workers. Mm-hmm. It is at the American One Event Center on April 22nd from 5 to 7. Small plates and appetizers are provided by Big Guy Catering, and child care is provided by Early Impressions. So there's child care right there on site. We'll have food and snacks for kiddos to munch on and to eat, games, things, you know, with a great local daycare provider, child care provider, and Big Guy Catering with great food.
Yeah.
So, and I just want to shout out, I think I missed Pro DJs and Design Plus were also, and Jackson Magazine, there we go. Those were the other ones that I missed earlier in my, they've all been so helpful. And, you know, they're the reasons we can make this work. So we're grateful for all of their help.
Okay. Well, I want to ask you a few other things.
Sure.
If you don't mind.
I don't mind.
We're not even halfway through the year yet.
Yes.
And the Jackson County Prosecutor's Office has already had some pretty good successes this year.
We have. You know, we work really hard. When I took over the office, you know, Jerry Trosinka and Katie Rizmirsky left great bones for me, right? We have a great staff. They let great bones for me, but I have a little bit of my own vision, right? You know, and I appreciate that Jerry says, yeah, this is your office now, make this what you want. You know, not that I needed his blessing, but it's always good to have,
right?
You know, and so when I came over, when I came up, one of the big things for me personally was, I'm a trial attorney. That's what I've done for my whole career. It's what I think our office is supposed to be, our trial attorneys. And so last year in particular, we made a really big effort to be trial attorneys, and that continues into this year. You know, we're not afraid to try cases, and we're fully capable and ready and willing to try cases. So I think that it has been a shift in the mindset of the office. And I think it goes well for our community, and our victims, you know, have their day in court and can feel heard You know, with whatever has happened to them, we're trying cases. So
Right. We
also have a major influx. You know, we've worked really well last year and this year with law enforcement, and we've done some extra trainings with them of, hey, I know you want your cases to be charged. That's why you're sending them to us. But sometimes there's some things we need. So let's talk about those ahead of time so that you know when you're out on the road what you need.
Right.
So they have, I think we have a whole influx, but I think more than anything, people are calling the police more.
Yeah.
I think what used to maybe be considered, this is just a family issue, now becomes, we're going to bring in law enforcement. It should have always brought in law enforcement, but now they're actually calling. So we've had an uptick in what law enforcement has submitted to us, but more than anything for our office, we're at a major uptick of what we're charging.
Right.
So we were charging closer to 60% of their cases. We're charging over 80% now of their cases. That's an influx of almost 1,500 files in our office in one calendar year. So we're drowning a little bit in those numbers because, of course, I have the same amount of staff. But my staff is just amazing, and every day they're working hard to clear files, to communicate with victims, to find justice, to find where that path is. And I'm grateful that they work, that I get to work with them every day. They also, because they are so good at their jobs, it allowed me to actually try a case a couple weeks ago because I knew that everything could be covered and I could go be a trial attorney again.
What was the turning? Because we're talking about the one from Vandy, right?
Yep.
What was the turning point in that case for you?
Yeah. So, you know, it was a case that I had assigned when Katie Rizmirski left and because she went back to Washtenaw and somebody needed to be on it. And I said, yep, sure, I can do that. That's fine. And as I got into that case, you know, sometimes as you prep cases and you get into it, you get more excited or less excited to try it, depending on how you get into it. And the more and more and more I got into that, the more I was like, I'm ready. I am so ready to try this. You know, and getting my feet wet last year. And I had cases that I handled last year, but nothing went to trial. Everything kind of pled as charged. And I can't stop that from happening. And so I did not try a case last year, which was a new experience for me to go a whole calendar year without trying one. So I was excited to get back into that, you know, driver's seat, if you will, and be the lead on a big case that had a whole lot of really good evidence. And that's because of Detective Kelly Ebersole from the Sheriff's Department. She put together just a phenomenal case. And I am so grateful that, you know, it was a case I got to work on and those victims stuck by us. It was a case that's been pending for a while. And I know they were a little frustrated at times with the court process and the system. But at the end of the day, it was guilty of a murder one, which is the highest charge you can get in the state of Michigan, and deserving so with those facts. But that jury was attentive and paid attention for the whole week of the trial. But Detective Ebersole, she put together just a phenomenal case. You know, when you have such a good detective, it makes my job easier, you know. And I still have to put it all together and present it to a jury, and I like that part of it. But she put together such a good investigation that it was like, yep, nope, we can do this. Right. So
we've got some high profile ones coming up.
We do. We do.
So how do you, I wish you had more time. We're going to have to have you back to button this up. But how difficult does that make your job when you have people who are well known in this community and you've got murder trials that are connected to them and their family?
Yeah.
How difficult does that make your job?
You know, what I will say is I stand in a good place of no matter who my victim is, no matter who the family is, I am always looking to do the right thing. And it's different in every case, right? We seek justice. You know, sometimes people are like, well, how many trials do you try in a year? And I go, I don't want to put a number on somebody. Mm-hmm. I want you to seek justice on every one of your cases. You know, so we try to treat all of them the same. Now, do some of them get more attention? Absolutely. You know, obviously the young man that I've charged who's 13 years old, you know, with a homicide, that one obviously gets a lot of attention. You know, your reference of Mia Sims's homicide, right? That one obviously gets a lot of attention. But we get cases that get a lot of attention. You know, we're fairly used to, at least in my part of the career and how long I've been there, I'm pretty used to the attention, if you will, you know, and I think it's a good, our media, MLive, you guys play a good role in getting messages out there and making sure the process is followed, making sure the system is doing what they're supposed to be doing. You know, that accountability, that's what I always say about defense attorneys. Their job is to hold us accountable to the rules of evidence and, you know, how a trial is supposed to go. And that's their job, is to make sure we do our jobs, you know, and the system doesn't work without both sides. I think the system all along is better when everybody has an interest.
Kelsey Guernsey, Jackson County Prosecutor, joining us here today. Out of time. I could talk to you for like another hour.
I would love it. But anytime, you let me know.
Thank you so much for being here.
You are so welcome. Have a great day.
This is AM Jackson on News Talk 970 AM 101.5 FM.
This has been the AM Jackson Podcast. Tune in live weekday mornings from 6 until 10 at News Talk 970 AM 101.5 FM and online at WKHM.com.